Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in life, our minds, our thoughts, our feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. In this show, I'll bring you the latest research about even mild long-term depressive symptoms among mothers are connected with emotional problems among small children, such as hyperactivity, aggressiveness, and anxiety. Then I'll speak to Dr. Ferishte Amin. She's an adjunct professor at Cal Poly in Pomona, and she's the author of Success Strategies of American Leaders. You can call us on the studio line if you'd like to speak to me or Dr. Amin, 951-922-3532. We're going to talk about success and happiness today. Be sure to listen to my podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and share with your friends and email me or call me and let me know what you're interested in so I can bring those conversations back to you. We'll be right back with the tip of the week. Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com. Well, here is tip of the week. And I'm sorry, my voice is a bit hoarse. I've been coming down with a cold, I guess. I've been working on shifting sadness into happiness and gratitude this week. I've worked on my own sadness, shifting it at times where I kind of was down, especially since I was sick. I was a little, you know, it affected my mood. And I think most people, it affects their mood. But I also, with my clients, I was working in looking at how we could shift ourselves, because stuff is going to happen all day where it could take your mood into a space of sadness or anger. But if we could have some control over it and shift it, what would it look like? There are many events that happen in our lives, or we hear news on the internet or on TV that makes us sad, scared, or agitated. How do you turn into this kind of a mood into a state of happiness? I've noticed that filling yourself up first with feeling of gratitude and love is the key to shift the state of being to the state of happiness. So as long as we keep looking at outside, looking at what's going out there, and putting it in a space of looking at negativity constantly, obviously we're going to get sad and scared. And it's not that those emotions are not valid for their own purposes, but the point is that the emotions are there in order to give us some notion of this isn't working, or something's going on that doesn't work for me, or I don't want to be a part of it, so I just want to push myself away. And I want to get the message, but come back to a state of content and happiness. How do you shift and create that for yourself and bring your fill yourself with love first? And the only way to do it is first start with you. There's no way of shifting the outside world. It's first start with you. So begin with appreciating yourself first. Maybe start looking at the mirror, looking at your body, including all the parts that you like. And even you can even claim the ones that you don't like and say, okay, I got it, that you're there. You're definitely useful. Even though I might not like the shape of my nose or whatever it is in my body that I don't like, at least appreciate what it's used for. It's used for breathing well when I don't have my cold. So it's more first appreciating yourself. You look at your face, you look at your body, you look at, you know, appreciating your hands for all that it does, appreciating your leg for moving you around. And I guess with our body, a lot of times we just take it for granted, unless for one day we get sick or one part of our fingers or legs or don't work. And then we really, really appreciate the one that we just lost, right? So what if we start appreciating our body from top to bottom, the beauty that it has, the functionality that it has, all the way that it really supports us and helps us move and moving forward. Then appreciate your belongings and achievements, things you already have, things that you look around your home, things that you are capable of getting, you know, maybe your car, maybe your job, maybe money, maybe things that you clothe, your, all of those. Things that you have achieved in your life, the capacity, capabilities, and everything that you can do, all your knowledge, those are yours. And have some gratitude for it. You know, pat yourself on the back a little bit. Appreciate all the people who are around you and that they're giving you love, care, and service. You know, we can't do anything on our own. We are so connected to each other that every single level that we're here together and connecting, it's because so many people are working hard to bring us this. And I appreciate you, Sean, for working so hard all the time to create this space for us and you guys. So you look at everybody that is around you who creates the essence of what brings you comfort all day. Appreciate all the people who are around you now, but were and are the source of your strength and your accomplishments. And even appreciate the people who are not here with you now, but they were source of appreciation, source of your growth. You know, maybe your parents, if they're no longer with you, they're the one who brought you into this world. Maybe there were teachers who supported you and taught you a lot of things. Maybe there was a neighbor, maybe there was somebody, a friend that held your hand and pulled you to another, you know, a step above, which you wouldn't be here if it wasn't really about them. So fill yourself with love and gratitude, and then share yourself from that place, from the place of gratitude, so that you can bring this source to others. And the return is spectacular, I'll promise you, and it will really, really serve you well. So love yourself and others now. Don't wait, just now, because you certainly deserve it. We'll be right back with the latest research.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Here's the latest research. According to recent research from National Institute of Health and Welfare, even mild long-term depressive symptoms among mothers are connected with emotional problems among small children, such as hyperactivity, aggressiveness, and anxiety. The study investigated how the depressive symptoms of both parents affected the child by the age of 2 and 5. The father's depressive symptoms affected the child's emotional problems only if the mother was also depressed. The mother's symptoms, however, affected the child even if the father was not depressed. Moderate depressive symptoms can be observed in over 20% of parents. Most serious symptoms are seen less than about 9% of mothers and 2.5% of fathers. So depression among parents both during and after pregnancy not only affects the person suffering from the depression, but also has a long-term impact on the well-being of the newborn child. Even in cases of mild depression, it is important that the symptoms are identified and the parents are offered support as early as possible, if necessary, already during the pregnancy. In families, depression experienced by the mother has a key impact on the child's well-being. The maternity clinic systems functions well, but attention should be paid to depressive symptoms among mothers over a long-term period also, from the pregnancy throughout the end of the child's first year of age. One parent's depression also puts the other parent at risk. The depression of one parent is a factor that can put the other parent at risk of depression as well. In addition, depressive symptoms among mothers and fathers are quite long-term. They can start already during pregnancy and continue past the child's first birthday. It's important to monitor the mental well-being of both parents during pregnancy and after the birth of a child. And if one parent depression, then the symptoms of the other parent should also be examined. Currently, however, father's psychological well-being is not necessarily covered by the questionnaires on maternity clinics. Prior depression is also the most significant risk factors. Long-term depression is an indication that the depression may have been experienced already before the pregnancy. Previous experience of depression is also one of the key risk factors for moderate or severe depressive symptoms. Other significant risk factors include sleep deprivation, definitely during pregnancy and beginning of the newborn's life, stress, anxiety, and a bad family environment. There's a lot of fights that happens right into pregnancy time in bad marriages or, you know, marriages at risk, and especially when the child comes at, and when both parents are really at stressed, they get into a lot of fights. These most prominent risk factors were predictors of depression among both mothers and fathers. The good thing is that depression is treatable. So if you notice that you have depression, especially whether you're pregnant or not, but then you're having a child, you need to go get help. There's a lot of help, different types of methods. There's medical management, psychotherapy, talk therapy, you know, cognitive behavioral, and the method that I created, awareness integration model, that we've done a lot of research in universities. Our latest research was in Long Beach, Cal State Long Beach, which just with my book, Life Reset, and not even doing therapy, we brought down depression about 63%. When in therapy, when we've done the studies, we've brought down the depression to 75%. That is a huge, huge, huge impact and an amazing number that has worked. So depression is something that is treatable. No one needs to stay in their own depression. And especially if you are pregnant or you have postpartum depression, you need to get help, because you definitely are not only affecting yourself, but it's affecting the whole essence of the child's life and the environment of your family. And you don't deserve to be depressed. You deserve to be happy, and you deserve to create an amazing family which are all happy. So get help if for any reason you know that you are depressed, even if you don't call it depression. If you're down most of the days, most of the hours of the day, and because there's situational things and you're like, well, I know what I'm upset about. Yes, you know what you're upset about, but there's always another way of thinking and looking and outlook and dealing with things, which the same thing that you are suffering so much around can become such an ease, and you can just let it go. And I think that's what you need to do, and you deserve to do that for yourself and everyone around you. So now I want to tell you about our guest. We're going to be talking to Dr. Ferishte Amin. She's an adjunct professor of management and leadership in College of Business Administration, California State Polytechnic University in Pomona. Ferishte is active in seminars and workshops in Amin Leadership Center of Los Angeles. In the capacity, she helps individuals achieve greater success in life and in business. Her workshops and seminars and coaching practices are based on scientific research, exposing the 5 common success factors exhibited by leaders who have successfully navigated the challenges of assimilation and multiculturalism. Dr. Amin has worked with individuals and organizations from around the world in both Iran and the U.S., and her book, Successive Strategies of Iranian-American Leaders, is currently in circulation in both countries. She's consulted managers in leadership and interviewed some of the most prominent business leaders in the U.S. to determine their secret of success. So we're going to talk about success and happiness. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Dr. Fereshte Amin.
I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com.
Dr. Fujian Zain is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fujian has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fujian.com. That's www.fujian.com. Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Inner Voice. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I'm so excited to have Dr. Fereshte Amin. She's an adjunct professor of management and leadership in College of Business Administration in Cal Poly. Welcome to my show, Dr. Amin.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me. I always get excited when I talk about this favorite topic. So it's an opportunity for me to go back and review happiness and success because that's my favorite. Thanks for the opportunity.
Of course.
So excited.
It's wonderful to have you, and I know that I've had you on my show before. And one of the most important factors, and I know that everybody wants to succeed. Like, there's no one that you talk to and they're like, no, I actually prefer to fail. Everyone is geared up towards success. Now, I get it that everyone's concept of success is very different. And some of us get the concept of success from our parents. Some of us get it from the society. But each one of us create a particular meaning for ourselves in a way that we assign the concept of success for ourselves. And I think there's also this assumption that success brings happiness. You know, it's like they're synonymous together, as if the only way that you create happiness for yourself, if you've achieved success, or even if you wasn't part of the achievement, at least you felt like success, even if you didn't have a tangible concept of, oh, if I achieve this and that, then that I would call myself, you know, successful and I'll be happy. It would be then contentment with who I am as the concept of, you know, happiness. And I know that you also teach this and you wrote a book about it. So how is it that you got even interested in the area of leadership, success, and happiness? And then let's go into the, you know, defining those terms.
It really takes a long time, hour to discuss that. But it's interesting that when I reviewed actually this morning for my talk, I realized, you know, from even age of 5, 6, I wanted to make my parents happy. That was a flashback. Even if I had something really I like to eat, I wanted to give it to my mom. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and because I really wanted to see her face happy. And so that's kind of my background. And now I feel it is like my purpose. Then when I started my doctorate in Pepperdine University on organizational leadership, in orientation, like a 2 days orientation, there was a professor, Dr. Vance Caesar. He, at the beginning, he talked about, happiness and success. And he said, you know, high achievers, he did research on high achievers, the people who achieve so many things. And so he read, his discussion was that, you know, they are 92% of them, after they achieve what they wanted, they worked so hard to achieve, they don't feel happy anymore. No. So, and then only 92%, that's a huge number. Almost everybody is not happy when they achieve. And then,
so it's like, what's the point? You try so hard to create something of success and then you achieve it and you're like, okay, yeah, what's next?
Exactly. And, you know, as a doctoral student, it was really kind of immediately I got interested in topic. Okay, what are the qualities of those 8% that they are happy? So this became the kind of my area of interest. And also I started when I was at Pepperdine, like for 4 years, I was his teaching assistant, his graduate assistant. He was following him everywhere he went. So, and he has written a book called High Achievers Guide to Happiness. So he's, that's because we have a short period. I thought maybe as a background, it's a general research, I will talk about that. And then if we have time, another session, I will talk about my own, which is like, you know, I use different population.
Right.
And so he said that, you know, high achievers, usually they have those like 92%. They have the quality, they have high drive, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, he mentioned at age of 2, even you can realize which child has high drive. It's because of excitement or fear. So they are more engaged in life. So first is high drive. Second is high self-confidence. It means that, you know, if somebody has achieved something, I can do it or I can learn to do it. And the third one is sense of self-responsibility.
Yes, that works.
Or locus of control, that's your word I'm using, psychological works, the words that... they feel responsible for their own life. And the four factor that none of them, and we are not aware of them, that, you know, we follow them for success, they have low self-esteem.
Oh.
Yeah, those 92%, they achieve. And what's the quality of low self-esteem? That, you know, at the end, they don't feel good about themselves. They always compare themselves to some, I should get that kind of success. After achieving the language they use, always they say, I have to get another degree to be happy. I have to get a bigger house to be happy after they achieve. It's never ending, you know, achievement. That's why they are high achiever.
And so one of the concepts that I'm hearing from you is that if the reason for achievement is to get validation from others, then obviously, whether it's the validation is from our parents or the society or whatever it is that we need that validation from, it seems like no matter what we achieve, there's always going to be somebody better than us, somebody higher with a higher degree, somebody is holding something that we need to actually move forward. So whatever we did, it was only good enough until we received it. And then we'll look at what's, again, not good enough and who has better. So I want to go higher than that and then be more of an achiever. And that's what I'm hearing from you, that calls it the low self-esteem. But if someone is a self-response, has the essence of self-responsibility and high drive, and they do it for the challenges that it makes them happy or it's their experience, then they enjoy the experience that they have. But if the experience is only to get validation from the external world, then it's going to be a kind of empty after they get there.
Exactly, exactly. Thanks for clearing that. Exactly, that's the point. You know, that's why, you know, self-confidence is like, you know, it's from outside condition. But self-esteem is from internal. You know, I feel good about myself regardless of I have achieved or not. As you mentioned that, you know, I do it for the experience because that's my essence. That's my, you know, purpose. So that's the difference. That's now we will talk about, you know, those 8% that they're high achievers. At the same time, they're high achievers. We're talking about high achievers, the people who achieve a lot, which, you know, is synonymous to successful people. That's kind of, I want to clarify. So what's the definition of success? To get what I want. Mm-hmm. What's the definition of happiness? I love what I achieve. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of overlap of success and happiness. And then, okay, those 8% who have, you know, achieved and they like it, so, or happy high achievers, they have a clear purpose. That's really kind of, they know, you know, their why I want to achieve that. For example, when I remember I was, you know, I started my doctorate when I had 3 children and mm-hmm. I had 2 girls, like I'm a late achiever. Anyway, so, but during that, you have get doctored, you know how, when you're going through dissertation, comp exam, I was so kind of stressed. But I said, why am I doing this? But then I remember I was in a conference, Marshall Goldsmith, the famous executive coach, was there. I kind of won one of his books. And when he wanted to sign it for me, he said, okay, what's your name? I said, Farishte. And he said, okay, Farishte, do you have girls, daughters? I said, yes. Okay, what do you want for your daughters? I said, oh, I really want them to be happy. And he said, Farishte, be happy, Marshall. So that when I wanted, for example, during my doctorate, I wanted to quit. That reminded me, oh, if I, you know, stop because something that I love, and okay, my daughters would do that. So that mm-hmm. became my purpose. If I, you know, fulfill my potential, if I, you know, achieve it, my daughters would do that. So this is kind of a purpose at each stage of our life. Even, you know, in the business, I teach business and leadership. Even the cover of the Fortune magazine this month is about talking the purpose of, in a big companies, they're talking about the purpose. And companies who have clear purpose, clear mission, they attract more clients, more customers.
If we even talk about driving, I mean, obviously, if you know where you're going and what the purpose of going there, then it makes the drive and all that happens a bit worth it. So a lot of if we're just putting ourselves out there and working for the sake of whatever it is, sometimes we work because of certain sense of survival, and maybe the sense of survival by itself is a purpose. Maybe at one point we need to be done with that and then move on to another essence of purpose, which goes beyond survival and it goes into some sort of an evolutionary concept. For example, people have children and that becomes part of the evolution that, you know, we need families, we need to have children and raise them. And so that becomes part of the success and it has a different purpose. Maybe, for example, for you, you shifted from the evolutionary concept of having children and now it was, what about me? Who am I and what do I need to do? And it was shifting from that to Okay, now let me go and find what I love. And I remember just before the show, Sean and I were talking about, well, after, you know, you have done your survival bit and say, okay, I have worked in order to survive and do all of that. And then what if I want to reinvent myself? What if everything that I've done, I'm done, like been there, done that, got videos, you know, I'm done with what I've done. I've learned all that I can learn. And what if I want to reinvent myself in another setting, you know, who would I be? And I remember like when I was growing up, I mean, because of what you just said about I had to fulfill my mother's role and what she wanted to meet, and I didn't really want it. So I was all over the place. I went and had businesses. I didn't want to be in the corporate world and all of that. And then finally, at age 30, it was more like, okay, I want to become a therapist. And I started going back into universities and getting my doctorate and, you know, becoming a therapist. So the kind of a life purpose, it can also shift from one phase to the next And it can be that when we choose our purpose. And I know sometimes, Dr. Amin, it's as if, you know, some people where the spiritual world, they feel like, you know, our soul comes with a purpose. And they're trying all day long to find what that purpose is. And sometimes we lose who we are here in practicality on earth to look at, well, we can choose a purpose anytime. We don't have to keep looking at, you know, what is there for us to do. Although, as I was sharing it also with Sean, is sometimes we can look at what we're really natural at and who we are as a natural person with our qualities of our character, you know, the best of who we are can just flourish when we put it in a scenario or in a place where it gives it light and makes it flourish. And the purpose could be also just living our best and giving the gift that is unique to us, you know, to the rest of the people. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. I think the purpose is something that, you know, at this moment, my purpose is like really contributing. That's the only purpose that right now I have with you. Yeah, each purpose, different. Thanks for clearing up that at each step of our life, each stage, we have different purposes. You know, it changes. For example, Bill Gates, when he started Microsoft, his purpose was every person should have a computer in their house. But when he, in 2006, when he stepped down from Microsoft, because his purpose was changing. He started Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So that's the beauty of purpose. It's that each stage, you know, we review. So when I explained the whole, you know, seven characteristics of high achievers, it's a loop, you know, that as you mentioned, reviewing, reinventing ourselves. Exactly. I think that's, you know, that's why the second part, second factor after purpose is vision. Having at this stage a clear purpose, a clear vision where I'm going. If I'm a family oriented, so I have a vision of like when I'm 80, I'm going to have a like birthday party, my grandchildren are around me, even though I'm working. Or the third part is that of the people who have like really clear vision and clear purpose, they're so present, they're attractive. And the third factor after that is meaningful work. You know, I have a job or a work that gets me to my purpose and vision. The meaningful work is really the essence of, I think, what you are doing. I'm doing, you know, I live in LA, I drive to Pomona, but really when I go, I'm with my students, it fulfills me. Mm-hmm. I feel like I haven't, you know, I'm contributing. So that's kind of a meaningful. The fourth factor is, we can come back, but I want to include because we may not have time to finish it, to go all on seven, then we can, you know, talk more detail in the each factors. So after meaningful work is the, you know, having meaningful relationships or energizing relationships. That's really, really important. You know, we have relationships that give us energy. And a secret I know you are a therapist and you are a master of, you know, relationships. That so the relationships, either at work or in family with our significant other, with children. So we have to feel that, you know, I have to feel that I'm getting more than I give. Each part should have that feeling. If one of them feels, oh, I'm doing all the work and he or she doesn't do, that's not sustainable. So if we don't feel that, we have to either, we're talking about the work, if I should change my job, if I feel, oh, this job, I'm doing all the work and they don't pay me enough, either I should change my job or change my attitude to the job. As you mentioned, the survival, it really is paying my bills.
Yeah.
I should appreciate it. It fulfills my purpose. But if it pays my bill, but I'm always complaining that it's, I'm doing all the work, this is not a healthy relationship. So that's why it's a huge another topic about the compensation. Money is just one part of the compensation.
Yeah.
There's six other factors that contributes to that. And then after relationships and people, what they expect in relationship, that's really interesting that, people want to be listened to be understood, to be validated, to feel empathy. That's the secret of feeling that relationship is you're getting more than you give. And the fifth factor is beliefs and behaviors that give us peace in uncertainty, in the situation, the chaotic situation. We all go through that. So that's very important that we have to check our beliefs and behaviors.
Yeah, those are the strengths that we have that we could hang in there for our resiliency. Like it's a bag of tools where we could push and say, okay, I can survive this. I can handle this. And, go back to what we know already in order to push us through.
Yes, exactly. So the sixth element is people who are happy, high achievers, they continuously reviewing themselves, renewing and recommitting, reviewing their purpose, their vision, their meaningful work, if they're even their relationships, their beliefs and behaviors. So that's why the importance, those people, they go like once a year for a week to a retreat to totally review themselves. And the example that I gave about Bill Gates, probably I could be the example. Maybe he has been there and said, oh, yeah, I'm done. Now should I, what's my purpose at this stage of my life? So they review their purpose. As you mentioned, the purpose at this each stage changes. For me, for example, when my kids were small, my purpose was really, feeding them, being a, caring mother to protect them. But when I was like getting my doctorate, I wanted to be a role model. My purpose was being a happy, successful mother for them. So they realized life is beautiful. You can achieve what you want. And so that's reviewing their, when they review their beliefs. If the one belief is life beautiful? Is world full of opportunities or life is dangerous? These are the beliefs that we have to review.
Also, I think that it's so much more important to be aware of ourselves, of our thoughts and emotions and what we do, because sometimes people keep going after achievements without living truly the achievement and knowing, coming back and repurposing themselves. They find themselves into a routine concept of, at one point they made a decision, they had a vision, they found the purpose, and then they put themselves in it. And even though their time is past, their purpose is different, their age is different, and their need and desire are different, they have found themselves in this path that they're going. They're getting unhappy, but because they've invested so much time onto a field, whether they studied it or they created businesses out of it or created network out of it, that they have no idea how to move away. Or, you know, they think that, oh my God, I got to shatter everything and start fresh and I can't. But this concept that you're talking about of reviewing and noticing, am I the same person who made the same decision about what my purpose should be when I was at age 20? Maybe my needs today are so different that it just doesn't work. You know, I've worked with a lot of professionals, you know, dentists and pharmacists and, you know, physicians, attorneys, that they've done so much investment on, you know, their careers. They've paid so much money and spent so many hours of, you know, doing their work until they became successful. And then, at, you know, after like the 10-year mark or 20-year mark, I'm like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. But the investment that they've put in there, they feel bad about, oh, I'm just going to say, oh, well, I don't want to do this anymore. But so what happens to all the investment? And yet they may make themselves miserable by insisting to carry on something that they decided 20 years ago, yeah, while they're so different and they're completely different human being.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you hear so many like TED Talks that, you know, oh, I was like that successful that, and then he left or she left everything and went to a ashram in India.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, they don't review every year themselves. They don't renew, they don't recommit. And that we, in decision making, we call it overcommitment. So commitment is good, but overcommitment is exactly what you are, you know, pointing out. That's why, you know, it's really pause, you know, review, reflect, and make adjustment. That, you know, who is not judging? You know, I'm responsible for my life. But some people, maybe at late ages, they become like, they have victim mentality. That, you know, oh, I have spent that money, and this is the, they start blaming the society, the system, everything that ends up. You know, I have to work so hard, pay insurance, malpractice, whatever you're pointing at, because they miss the point of, you know, we all have to review, renew and recommit and gradual, you know, adjustment. Like, you know, for if you go to the forest, you know, I just came back from, you know, Santa Cruz, which is like redwood forest. And when I was driving to the airport, I would see, oh my God, the tall trees, you know, they are leaning to search sun. That's our nature. Mm-hmm. But if we don't adjust, and then we die, like trees die. So that's very, very important to, you know, really set the time for to review ourselves. What's my purpose at this stage of life? So that's it needs. And the last 7-point factor is discipline. You know, I have to put in my calendar. So for that, you know, it's a discipline that I have to, for example, every year or right now, really, because of the pace of the fast, you know, environment, everything, maybe even some people, they really every season they go to a retreat to really review because it's fast change. So then I have to have a discipline to put that. I have to have a discipline to take care of my body, to take care of my beliefs and spending time for myself, to whatever is important for me. If we don't have discipline, that's a famous word from Scott Peck, The Road Less Traveled. He mentioned, without discipline, you can't achieve anything. With some discipline, you can achieve something, but with total discipline, you can achieve anything you want. That's really, it has been, you know, emphasized in all ancient traditions, the importance of discipline.
I also have noticed, Dr. Amin, that people who, and I work with people who, like we talked about, they've invested a lot on some career, or that they have to work at a location for survival base. And they're done with this. But then if they don't feel success, I've also watched people to create what they need from the purpose of the meaningful work and something that is their, you know, passion and they can do with relationships in a different area. First begin as a hobby and, you know, get themselves into it and really get good at it. And then from there, maybe try to look at that maybe as a career possibility, or even if it's not a career possibility, they might still feel as a success if they do something which to them means, you know, if it's fulfilling. You know, a lot of people who are philanthropists, they're not necessarily doing anything themselves, which are the success people, the people who go, you know, to give their time as a volunteer to another group. So success does not necessarily have to be attached only to career and money. It can be, you could get your career and money from another perspective and, you know, still feel success in such an other realm. It's beautiful to bring these two together at one point. But if we can't start off from that space, maybe we could have it split off and then join. What do you think about that?
As we, you know, define the success, it's being clear what I want, what makes me happy. Who defines success for me? As you mentioned, I have to define success to get what I want, what I decide I want. I remember I had an MBA when I started having, I got my MBA from Iran. Then when I came here, everyone would say, oh, get an MBA here. If you get your doctorate, you don't make much money. Go work with your MBA here, or you can get another MBA from top universities, because you become more successful. But to me, it was because I'm a learner. That's what I love to learn and share my learning. So who defines, you know, my success? So then I chose my journey because I was so clear that, you know, that's who I am.
Yes.
And then gradually after, you know, exploring, I realized, oh, this is what, if I'm also, you know, entrepreneurial, from very practical. If I study doctorate, I want to use it. I want to be practical. I don't want to preach and not use it.
Yes.
So that has become, I have created my own kind of small circle that, you know, includes my purpose, my vision, my family, whatever, beliefs, relationships. And you're right. You know, who defines? It's each moment.
Yeah. I know that you have a class starting at 4 and you need to leave a little bit early to be able to be with your students on time. And I thank you with all this, you know, pressure time that you accepted my invitation. In 1 minute, if there's anything we haven't talked about and you really want our audience and viewers to know about the concept of happiness and success, what would it be?
I think I mentioned, if I want to start, I have to start so many things, but I think it's like really being present at this moment to what I have achieved now. For example, I'm really grateful, even though, you know, I have to go to class, but I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to share this, my, you know, what I love with you, being grateful with a new experience each moment.
Beautiful.
And at the end of the day, so I'm going to jot down, oh, that was a great experience. Actually, I have at 4, I have exam for students. So they're stressed and I'm sitting here. So that's, for me, it's like a joy. Oh, yeah. I could do it in a different, you know, yeah. A new experience. I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Wonderful. Dr. Amin, where can people find your Amin Leadership Center in Los Angeles? And if they wanted to show up and get your workshops or any of the seminars or just find you and your books, where should they go?
Okay, they can email me, aminleadership@gmail.com. And so my English version book is available at Amazon. But the Farsi, I think maybe they can shoot me an email. I will mail them.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being on the show. It was great. And I will let you go because I know you have to go, and I will go over the 7 approach to success after you're gone for everybody. So we'll have the review for them. Thank you so much for being with us.
So much, Pujan. I really appreciate it. Have a wonderful stuff. And thanks, Sean, for checking everything and giving us this opportunity.
Yes, okay. Yes, he's awesome.
Do more. Thank you.
Thank you. So everyone, I think that Dr. Amin has talked about 7 steps, and that we're having your purpose, having your vision ready, having meaningful work, relationships that are working for you, and they really offer something to you that you really can experience those. And then you check your beliefs and behaviors that would work for you and would move you forward. Continue to review yourself and everything that's going on. And then 7 is having the discipline, to work it through with all of that. Now, Sean, are you there? Beautiful. I know that we were talking about some of the concept. Did you get anything out of that conversation based on how to reinvent and how to create and all of that for yourself, or, you know, people you were asking about?
Well, definitely an interesting conversation. I might even listen to it again just to grasp a little bit more of it.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. I think that we were started talking about gratitude at the beginning of the show, and I think that we kind of ended it also with the concept of having the gratitude in how much of the concept of gratitude makes us go into a state of happiness versus the, you know, every time we look at lack and what we don't have, we go into the space of scarcity, fear, sadness. And the same moment, if we start looking at what we do have, we go back into content and happiness and, you know, the sense of success. And both are there. It's just to look at things we don't have and then create the vision and system in order to find it and get it and achieve it and so we can have it. But also to have the essence of what we do have. Because those are our strengths. Those are that was creates resiliency. That's what is there. And I think that in order to shift ourselves continuously into being happy and being committed, really being committed to the state of happiness, makes us keep moving toward the concept of gratitude of what we have, feeling successful for who we are. I think that it creates lots of joy for us. So create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. Until next week, bye-bye.